It is time for the Berkshire Edge On Air, a time where we get together with David and Marcy, talk about stories that they've got. Not nearly all the stories, because they have so many stories posted every day, 7 days a week, and it's available at theberkshireedge.com 24 hours a day. And I think the only time they really get a break from that is when they talk with us. Good morning, guys.
That's right. That's why we do this. It's kind of like sleep.
That's right. Very cathartic. Very cathartic. That's right. Well,
talking in our sleep, actually.
Hey, believe you me, there's been more than a time where I've been out at meetings and had to catch myself, almost like back in high school days when you used to put your head behind a book in study hall and sleep. It's just one of those things. Yeah. What the lead story that you have up there is Great Barrington has been noted for a lot of things, but it lingers on the local libertarian think tank with the Great Barrington report from the American Institute for Economic Research, and it's the story that just won't go away from Great Barrington.
No, it won't. They issued the so-called Great Barrington Declaration, and it was a think tank document that, in the midst of this pandemic, said that, well, we should just, we don't need a vaccine. It'll just die out. Sound familiar? You know, just go away. Of course, a lot of people will die, but that was their kind of hands-off, let the market take care of itself approach.
You know, and
we have had a very interesting and thoughtful letter from a local attorney named Dan Seitz, and we posted that yesterday, saying, you know, don't just dismiss this as some right-wing insanity. You know, look at this carefully. You know, they are making some interesting points, and the and we have to look at the side effects of shutting things down. So it's worth reading. I mean, it's you know, he's a very interesting man who has worked in natural medicines for most of his career. I mean, that's been, you know, part of what he does. I mean, the policy and legislation of more natural therapies. And he makes some very interesting points, which I think, you know, are, I mean, he's saying that these people are not idiots at the AIER, and that they have, you know, some interesting ideas which, you know, should be considered.
I think, you know, I think he's absolutely right, because, you know, when I looked at that story, and I've looked at it several times, and when I read portions of it, to me it was an economic document that happened to include the pandemic.
Not a medical document.
Yeah, it was, and if you look at the economic side, well, then you can have the banter back and forth. You really can, but I think a lot of people are taking it not only as an economic document that also kind of veers off and goes into medical, but the basis of it is really based on the economics of shutdowns.
Right.
Well,
it's not a political document.
Yeah, not at all.
Well, it is a political.
Well, it is.
Document.
It's been made into one.
Well, because the implications of it are certainly political. The you know, hands off the market. This is Ayn Rand.
It's also the Koch brothers, you know. It is a very conservative perspective. But on the other hand, you know, I think that we have gotten to the point where we just have blinders on. You know, our minds are made up. Don't confuse us with the facts. And, you know, and I think we're never going to get through this period unless we realize that there are, you know, someone like Dan Seitz, is an intelligent guy who has the best of intentions, and I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, he cares, and he has another perspective, and it's worth taking a look at.
There's nothing.
I mean, it's true that most scientists around the world have dismissed this Great Barrington Declaration as, you know, garbage and right wing garbage. But I think it's worth looking at Dan's letter, because he talks about the downsides of quarantine and the damage that's being done, you know, as a result of quarantine, which may be as widespread as the damage that can be done by, you know, by by opening things up. So it's I mean, I'm not.
He's not necessarily also an advocate of their. He calls it faulty science.
Too. Yeah, but you still you open yourself up to other views, and if you're really going to try to make a decision on that, read the document and try
and
to
read,
understand.
And read, you know, Dan's letter. I mean, yeah. He's, you know, what he says. I mean, it, you know, people have made fun of this document because they, you know, the AIER says that it's been signed by, you know, 400,000 people or whatever, 40,000 people, I guess. And, you know, some of those names were phony names. And then they took the list down. They had the list on their website, and they've taken the list down. But he does say that the people who, you know, drafted and signed the original document are, you know, are not lightweights.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So, again, I mean, I worry about this whole herd immunity. I mean, I worry that there are crackpots like that. Dr. Atlas, who's a radiologist now advising Trump on epidemiological policy, you know, he knows nothing about it.
Yes.
And this declaration kind of, you know, agrees with him. But still, I mean, I respect Dan Seitz, and I think it's just worth reading.
Okay.
I must say that this Great Barrington Declaration just went all over the world.
Yes,
it
did. Yes.
Right. I mean, it was picked
up. The Guardian wrote about it.
Oh,
PBS NewsHour had a piece about it. I'm sure it was elsewhere,
it's,
too.
It's been published.
So now we're going to be known. Barrington, this bastion of liberal thinking and liberal politics, is going to be known as the home of this crackpot right-wing cult.
Well, they're not a crackpot right-wing cult, but they're going to be seen as that by a lot of people.
Yeah, and people that think that will not have even read the document or not really understand about the document.
No.
Let's go on to your next story, and that is your columnist, a column about social Darwinism.
Mm.
Oh, that's Carol Owens, yeah. Well, she's responding to this same issue.
Yeah.
She writes about this, too, how it's been accepted it's been a tradition in a way. It's been a theme of thinking, you know, for a long time. That's her historical perspective on this. Is really pretty interesting. She calls it social Darwinism, and she said that it. She points out that it's kind of on the rise again.
You know, it's an interesting back-to-back look at both the Barrington document and really about. I've never heard the term social Darwinism before, but it does.
Oh, really?
It rings true. Rings true.
No, it was a very big movement at one point, and in fact. You know, it's sort of the basis of the Nazi discrimination too. I mean, they felt that certain people were more deserving to be bred than others.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's not the type of thing that we've heard about recently a lot. I want to move on, though, because your next story, Dan Dwyer does a radio show here, and he did a two-part series with Alison Drew, talking about the disappearance of her father and the particulars and how she still hopes to find out what happened. And then I look at and I read your story on this, and it's a compelling story, and it's a real interesting story.
Yeah, it seems to be. And it's interesting, you know, this is one of those missing people stories that is sort of a mystery. And, you know, lots of areas have these stories that sort of linger. They're kind of become almost like legends. You know, I remember when I was living in Vermont, there were, in Bennington, Vermont, there were many stories about people who had hiked into the mountains and just never it just disappeared. This is another one of those. It's interesting that this has now come back up because of a book, and it's a story you guys must have been following too for a long time.
Well, yeah, because I personally know the person who was watching.
Really?
Watching him. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's a very well known person in this area that was, and there's
that
just
was one of the who was watching the man who disappeared.
Yeah, there's a lot of untied ends in this story, and unfortunately it's the type of story that is going to be out there, and I think really what people have to look when they look at and they listen to Alice and Drew and they hear the story, all they are looking for, the Drew family right now, is closure, and they don't
right.
You just never have that closure unless you absolutely know what happened.
Right.
It's. I can't imagine going through the rest of my life not knowing if my mother disappeared, not knowing
right.
why I'm.
Yeah.
That's yeah. just something that doesn't go away until you get that closure. So it's an interesting story, Ed. And if you can buy the book is actually also a great, gives you a lot of great insight into it as well.
Yeah, I thought you guys would be interested in this particular story because it's. You know, in your neighborhood there, yeah. Salisbury.
You've got now the Boston Symphony Orchestra is back front and center, and COVID-19 back front and center with this Holiday Pops concert.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, the orchestra is coming back, or at least it's on stage somewhere, and it's going to be able to be streamed. But it's been a kind of the stages have been dark in Berkshire County.
Well, except that I must tell you that we went, that there were about 18 people in the audience, but we went to a live concert last Saturday. And again, full disclosure, I am chair of the board.
Well, that's our sixth item.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, can I move it up?
Well, we can go to...
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'm chair of the board of this music series, Close Encounters with Music, and they are doing a series of streamed concerts from the Mahewi, but the first one was actually taped before a very small live audience, and it will be... It'll go live on the Mahewi website and the Close Encounters website at 7:30 this Sunday. Saturday at 7:30. And it's a gorgeous concert. But I must say that David and I, it was such a pleasure to attend a live concert.
Yeah.
As I said, I mean, they were, you know, it was only the board of Close Encounters that was invited, and half of them didn't show up because they were afraid to go to an inside concert. But so there were about 18 of us all together in the audience, you know, in the whole Mahewi. So we were in the first row of the balcony looking down, and it was like we had our own private concert. And the musicians were in tears. They were so happy to be back on a stage performing before live people. And there's a little Q&A with the musicians at the end of the concert that'll be on the tape. Worth waiting for because, you know, they talk about what it's been like for them not to be able to play before live people.
You know, it's interesting. In New York State, movie theaters are going to be allowed, I do believe, in the next week or two to open up to limited capacity. And our movie reviewer, David Sterrett, since he's in Maryland, they opened up the theaters there. And he's been going to see some of the movies during the day, and mm-hmm. and he was a little wary at first, but he's gone now, I think, to five or six different movies, and he's been the only one in the theater. So it's almost been like he's been at a private viewing room to see this on the big screen. But I'll tell you what, the entertainment industry and the movie theater industry itself has got to do a lot of clawback because they've lost so much money. And even if you allow, I would say 30 or 40% of the amount of people inside the movie theater, with the cost, it's just, you know, it's going to be hard for movie theaters to break even, even allowing 30 to 40 to 50% of the people in the building.
I know.
Yeah, that's true.
It is. It is. And, you know, and the other thing, I mean, you know, every time I get together with friends on Zoom, they're talking about all these wonderful things they've been watching on, you know, on all of the premium channels or Netflix and Amazon. I mean, it coincided with a golden age of television where, you know, there was already all this scripted content that's so fantastic, these miniseries that the movies are paling by comparison.
Well, it's interesting. I do watch a lot of Netflix. I do watch a lot of Amazon Prime. What I found myself watching also is movies I would never, ever go to the theater for. But here's what I do miss. I've got a big screen. I mean, huge. I think it's like a 90-inch screen. And I've got surround sound. And I've got everything.
Like in a theater.
But it's fun to watch sports on. But I'll be honest with you. It's okay to watch a movie on, but there's just something, maybe because of going to a theater and having the huge screen and sitting there with some popcorn, really. And
sitting in the dark.
And sitting in the dark and watching a movie. I mean, I can't imagine me loving Star Wars, the whole series, as much if it only came out in a format that was TV type of format. I don't think you wouldn't have the attraction and the longevity of it. There's something about movie theaters and the screens that just make that impact. It's like seeing live music. You can hear recorded music, but when you go someplace and actually see it and seeing live stage, it just leaves an indelible mark on you. So
there is sort of the event. Talking about movies, there's the sort of event aspect that you go someplace, you go out to see it. And also there's the rest of the audience.
Yeah.
And their reaction makes a difference.
It's a weird and tricky situation. Well, let's go back to reality once again.
Okay.
No. Well, this is reality.
You're right. It is reality, and in a non-reality type of. I still, like I said, I'll wrap this up by this. I'll never watch a movie on my phone. Okay, period.
Never. And there's a woman in my book club who reads the books on her phone.
I'm
and
sorry.
And I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, never. I'm sorry. Not for me. Okay. Let's go to Hannah Van Sickle.
Yeah.
Let's go to Hannah Van Sickle.
Yes.
Right. Well, she has a nice story here about the food pantries in Berkshire County, or South Berkshire County anyways, are remaining open and are really... It's, you know, a life or death situation for some people. These are absolutely essential institutions for so many, especially in this pandemic time where people are impoverished, and it's a interesting story about how these food co-ops are and food pantries are coping with this.
Yeah, and what's interesting is most of the food pantries around here, and we are involved with the folks that do the Sunday in the Country food drive, they always purchase all their foods locally and deliver it to local pantries. So, and they used to have a lot of fundraising events. Well, they can't now, so they're doing raffles, and they're raising money that way so they can distribute the food. But what we found out talking to the food banks around here and the pantries is that the demand is not just the normal demand for people that were low-income families that needed to feed their children. Now, because of the pandemic and because of people being unemployed, their demand is up by almost 25%.
Yeah.
And I got an email which we're going to post too. I mean, from Berkshire Bounty, which is a food pantry. It runs the People's Pantry. It sends their produce to the People's Pantry in Great Barrington. And they're starting another drive, but their last drive resulted in over 2,000 pounds of donated food, and it goes to the People's Pantry and the South Congregational Church. This is, this is incredible, and they have it set up so that drivers go to donors' homes. They ask the donors to, you know, leave canned or packaged foods by their doors, let them know that it's ready, and drivers will go pick it up, so it's contactless. And also, there are drop-off points at either the People's Pantry or at the Synagogue Hevra in South Berkshire, Hevra of Southern Berkshire, which is in Great Barrington, where you can drop food off, so you don't have to touch anybody to donate. And they have been more active. I mean, they've been around. Berkshire's Bounty has been around for a few years, but it's been even more active this year.
Well, those stories and many, many, many more. You guys do a great job of bringing local news and having.
We're trying.
And it's well, it's not just local news. It deals with entertainment. It deals with your calendar. It deals with your magazine. It's a whole experience that once again exposes to our local area. Yes, we're still alive. Yes, go out and live. And yes, there are things going on. And yes, there's stories
there
you should follow.
There are things going on. So. I mean, there really are a lot of things going on. And, for example, we got something from the West Stockbridge Library. I think it's on our calendar. But they are doing a ghost walk or something.
For Halloween.
For Halloween. I mean, there are things happening for Halloween. And there is a very limited trick-or-treating allowed, at least in Great Barrington. So there are things going on. Of course, I worry very much about what's going to happen when the weather gets cold.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
The restaurants are going to deal with this.
But just keep up the good work that you're doing.
Thank you.
The BerkshireEdge.com is the location, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye, Marshall.
That is David and Marcy from the Berkshire Edge, theberkshireedge.com.